Welcome in. It's the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Friday edition of the show to wrap up the week. Feeling a lot better now that the Eagles have a running back. If you didn't hear, I don't know how, you must live under a rock if you didn't hear, but the Eagles did trade for Chicago Bears running back Jordan Howard yesterday for a fifth round pick in 2020. Well, it's a sixth round pick that could become a fifth in 2020. So a player that, while isn't a do-it-all running back, certainly a big boost. Me and Gino, we got into that yesterday. We reacted to the trade, got into all the details, what it means for the draft, what it means for potentially adding another veteran running back. So you can go check that out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Himalayan Podcast app, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just tell your smart device, just tell Siri, just tell Alexa to play the Locked On Eagles podcast. And of course, you can always hear it on LockedOnEagles.com. As for today, what we're going to get into, just a couple things that I want to talk about with the league meetings going on this week. We saw Jeffrey Lurie talking about a wide variety of topics, same with Howie Roseman, same with Doug Peterson, but everybody's there and rule changes are on the table. One big one has already been announced, that offensive and defensive pass interference calls and non-calls will be reviewable in 2019, a direct response to the Nickell Robey-Coleman play in the NFC Championship game, the Rams against the Saints. So we're going to get into that in this first segment, get into some other proposals from teams that could potentially change rules in the NFL. And then the final two segments, we got some trade-up candidates. We hinted at it yesterday, the optionality now that the Eagles have, now that they have a running back, they can basically do whatever they want in the draft. Gino mentioned trading down. I even talked about potentially moving up for somebody like Ed Oliver or who else, not going to spoil any other names because that's what we're going to get into later on in the show, but who else could the Eagles maybe move up for if they are willing to give up extra picks? That's coming up later on the show. But for now, I want to get into this with you, Gino. Just your initial reactions to pass interference calls or non-calls now being able to be reviewed by coaches' challenge. Is this something that you're on board with?
We're going to have to wait and see. That's basically how it's going to be. I think that's how the helmet-to-helmet rule was this year. I think preseason got a little ahead of itself. I think they were throwing a lot of flags in regards to that penalty. But I think this one, somebody's going to get upset somewhere down the line that it's going to cost them a game or so. I thought they would go the route of the targeting call, with how college does it, where you can get ejected and you could challenge that way. I like that rule a lot because there's a lot of objectivity to it and the replay clears up a lot of things, because in quick motion, like a hit to the head, it could seem really bad, but if the receiver lowers his helmet, it may not be as bad. I think this one, the pass interference, it's going to be a lot of bang bang plays, like almost a review at first base or second base in the MLB, you know, when a player touches the bag and the ball's going into his mitt. I think it'll be what came first. Did the ball get there first? Did the hand get there first? It'll be interesting to see the approach on it, and it'll be interesting to see where coaches really want to throw that challenge. Do they throw it when it's just they're down by a touchdown and they're trying to quote unquote throw Hail Mary? Are they going to challenge it late in games? Is it going to slow down the games more late in games? Or would they be apt to do it right away on a big play, like in the first quarter? So it'll be interesting to see. People are going to get mad one way or another. That's how every rule change comes in the NFL. But I think it's a step in the right direction. A use of replay, continued use of replay, is something that the NFL continually has to improve on. Jeffrey Lurie says he's been a big advocate for the past 10 to 15 years to continue the amount of replay that they use. And frankly, every single sport across the world is doing it. And I mean, golf has that. You could track the ball in golf.
That's right,
and soccer, you have the VAR now. And soccer is the most, I'd say, old school sport. So now that they're even going towards it, it's the inevitable. And the NFL, if they want to continue to grow viewership, have to use ways to use the replay as a positive, and I think this is a step in the right direction.
It's funny because I'm looking at all the rule changes or proposals, and almost all of them have to do with not letting refs ruin games. And it's, you know, the Rams-Saints game, right? And then, of course, we know the second game between the Eagles and Cowboys in Dallas while you couldn't really review it again because it was already something under review, but that first play, remember the kickoff, where there's seven Eagles, mm-hmm. you know, 5 to 7 Eagles on the ball, no Cowboy in sight, but there's no quote-unquote clear recovery, and that almost cost the Eagles a playoff spot. If they lose that game and they did lose that game and say they don't win one of those final three or the Bears don't beat the Vikings week 17, the Eagles aren't in the playoffs, and a large part could be because of that result. So it's funny, it just, a lot of it had to do with not letting refs have, you know, such a significant impact on the results of the game. I'm kind of going back and forth with it because I do want to get it right. I do think that if it's a clear play like the Roby Coleman hit, that's something that the ref should not be able to decide who goes to the Super Bowl based on a missed call. But at the same time, I almost wish it was something you could only review if it's where the action of the play happened, right? So let's just say, hypothetically, DeSean Jackson runs a streak down the right side of the field, and he absolutely burns Janoris Jenkins for an 80-yard touchdown. But then on the left side of the field, Nelson Agholor maybe pushed off, right? Inside the slot on like a 5-yard crosser, whatever. It has nothing to do with the play at all, right? But the coach can now review, you know, challenge that. And then it's almost like the offsides challenge in the NHL.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
Right? So that's where I'm concerned is how far, and you said it too, we're going to see how the refs interpret this rule, how they're going to address it and enforce it. So that's a great point. We'll see how that actually happens in the season. I'm concerned about that because that's what I don't want is the ticky-tacky calls where, okay, if it's a clear call or it's a clear missed call, then you throw that challenge flag and you allow that. But at the same time, like, I kind of like sometimes when the refs swallow their whistle and they let Jalen Mills get dirty in the red zone and they let those guys go at it. The ticky-tack calls like the Gilmore one on Brandon Cooks that people are saying, now that should have been pass interference. I mean, I guess it by the actual rule, the literal definition of the rule, sure, but this kind of takes out that ability for the refs to just let the guys play. So I go back and forth with it. I don't know how I feel yet.
Yeah, I think the ticky-tacky thing is going to be a headache, and we're going to see how they call it. And I think you made a good point with the NHL offsides, because many times those offsides occur like outside of the pace of play that had nothing to do with the play. And
exactly,
I could see that happening in this regard. But Jeffrey Lurie made a good point, and he pointed to one play in particular, and that Dallas Goedert play in that Dallas game. And I think that's where this rule is going to come into play, because they called that OPI, and there was no way on God's green earth that long touchdown that Dallas Goedert had any sort of OPI called against him. And I think that would be good, because that affected that game completely, Lou, because look at how much longer it took them to get down the field. There would have been probably 4 or 5 minutes left on the clock. Instead, they go, there's 2 minutes left by the time they score. Dallas takes the ball right down the field and scores to take the lead, and there's nothing they could do. So I think that is going to open up things. And for teams that should have had touchdowns called, and there's a stupid OPI penalty like that Dallas Goedert one, it is going to be beneficial. But there are going to be times, like the Eagles at the end of the Super Bowl, when there's a Hail Mary and there's all sorts of contact.
Could you imagine if like Belichick could have had the ability to
somebody
throw the flag?
Somebody in Philadelphia would have, it would have just been mayhem if that happened, that they got one last play on the goal line. But that's the thing that's going to frustrate fans if they don't figure it out quick. And they have to set a quick precedent. They have to outline it, much like they did with the new and improved catch rule, much like they did with the new and improved helmet or lowering of the helmet rule. But they have to continue to enforce it. Like that lowering the helmet rule, how many times did it get called in the playoff, in the preseason? I was seeing like 3-4 times a game. And then the regular season hit, and it was never called. So they have to continue to do that, continue to have distinct guidelines, because there's too much up in the air calls. And I really think this reviewability of this is going to improve it. Just have set guidelines and just let the fans know exactly what we have to be looking for, because there are so many times you watch NFL games, you're like, oh, that could be a hold, but it's not a hold. That could be an OPI, but that's not an OPI. That could be a DPI, so on and so forth. Just make it clear and concise for not just the players, but for the coaches and for the fans as well, because that's going to continue to improve the game all around. Just don't get caught up in the ticky-tacky crap, which we've seen the NFL do time and time again.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess the good thing too is that like coaches don't have more challenge ability now. They still have the same amount of challenges that they have in any game. So it's not like it's, oh, they also get granted, you know, two more challenges, which can slow the game down and make it more ticky-tacky. So I guess that's good too. But you got me thinking, because when you talked about that Goedert play, I remember there was a helmet-to-helmet clear, like, personal foul call, a player safety violation on Dallas Goedert, and that went non-called. So to me, like, this is the thing is, now this opens a whole can of worms where if you're going to be able to challenge pass interference, well, then I should be able to challenge that, that it was actually a helmet-to-helmet hit on Goddard that should go the other way. Or how about the clear face mask where Jadeveon Clowney almost takes Nick Foles' head off?
Oh, yeah.
Right on that the two-point conversion. So now it's kind of – and that's actually something that's on the table is you could have the ability to review personal fouls and player safety violation plays that can be reviewed as well. So to me, that's something that's interesting – because Dallas Goedert, it shouldn't have been offensive pass interference. What it should have been, actually, was a helmet-to-helmet call on the defense.
I agree, and that's where it's going to come into play. Like, if you review an OPI, can you get another call called against you, like a helmet-to-helmet? That's going to be interesting to see. I think they're more focused on that pass interference action, but, hey, maybe one of the refs messes up the rule and you do get a change in a helmet-to-helmet or something like that. It's going to be so interesting to see. I'm really interested to see how it plays out in the first week of the preseason because it's bound to happen and it's bound to cost the team one way or another. Not everybody's going to be satisfied, but I do think this is a step in the right direction. One other thing is they need to have every single ref be a full-time ref, and these guys need to be in there constantly, just like the players, breaking down their own film because the higher ups break down the film of these refs and they award them points and they award them like this ranking system. These guys have to be doing it themselves. They have to understand what is the correct play and what isn't, because you saw it when they had the replacement refs that Green Bay and Seattle game. I mean, how much farther along are we from replacement refs? Like, I still don't think the game overall is being called to the fullest potential that it could be. And that's why college football right now is sitting way better than the NFL is, because I love that targeting rule. I love their offensive and defensive pass interference rules, that there's no spot fouls, that it's 15 yards. I think that makes the game way more competitive. And I just think there are a lot more things in college that the NFL can learn from, and I think there are things in the AAF that the NFL can learn from, and they're going to have to continue to adapt to keep their fan base strong, because there are a lot of people by a lot of these rules that get upset and get frustrated. Look at the Saints. The entire market of New Orleans dropped drastically for the entire viewing of the Super Bowl just because of one single play. So think, just if more and more people get on board that the NFL – can really see a difference, and it could, once it starts to hit their bottom line that these changes aren't making a difference, that's when the NFL will really start to reconsider things. But I do think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I really wish the verbiage of this new rule, though, was that it could only be on the play of the ball, because it really, because now, yeah, the ref could, you know, call it a certain way, but now it's not just up to the refs. Like, you talked about making them full-time, but at this point, we've almost taken a lot of power out of their hands. Now a lot of it goes to the coach. So if there is a play on the total opposite side of the field, it's really out of the ref's hands at that point. It can be up for review. So I don't know. Again, you make a great point that we're just going to have to wait and see how this pans out, how not only the refs, you know, go about this, but at the same time, how the coaches do as well. And maybe depending on the extremes of what happens this year, maybe they could adjust the rule a little bit based on what I'm describing. But let's look at some other ones here as well that have been proposed. So this one was interesting, and this one was by Denver. You can not only elect to do an onside kick, but also, Gino, now there's a potential rule where if a team scores and say you're down by six with only, you know, 50 seconds left, no timeouts, you could elect to have a 4th and 15 to get the ball back. To me, I understand how impossible it is to convert an onside kick, but at the same time, I feel like 4th and 15 is kind of going way too far the other way. I don't know.
I mean, in the AAF, they did the 4th and 12, and that's worked pretty well. And as Eagles fans have seen, the Corey Graham Memorial rule would actually work. I don't know who I took that statement from, but somebody on Twitter used the Corey Graham Memorial rule, and I thought it was an absolutely golden tweet. Whoever it is, you're a brilliant writer. But Eagles fans have seen it, and I think that would add another element, because there's so many times when onside kicks, they just go and they're not even close. But I think that would be a very interesting rule to see, and how teams start to scheme up these plays? Do the defenses play stick defenses? Do they take a penalty? And what happens if there's a penalty on that play, you know? So there's one play that decides it all. Do you just take a pass interference? Does that automatically give them a first down?
Well, that's the thing, too. So if this is going to happen for me, even though I'm not a fan of it, especially with Jim Schwartz, I'm going to be so nervous every time the picket fence goes up on fourth and 15 to save the game, right? But one thing I will say, you just mentioned it, I don't think if this is going to be a rule, since it's a conversion, basically, it's an attempt to get the ball back, it should not be able to be complete by a penalty. You know, if, say, there's a pass interference call, I think there should be a redo. Mm-hmm. But in no way, shape, or form should. I mean, we're talking about taking less power away from the ref's impact on the game. This is another rule where, to me, I want the refs out of this one. If there's pass interference, fine, redo. But you should not be able to get the ball back based on a pass interference.
Yeah, and I think you'd have to work that out a lot. So there's a lot of things to work out, but I think that element could add some intrigue because, say, you have a really good onside kicker. You go and take the onside kick. Say you trust your quarterback more. Say you toss Carson Wentz out there on a 4th and 15. I think that would add way more excitement than a lot of these guys that just do onside kicks and it's destined to go in the hands of the receiving team. So I don't hate that rule. I thought it would get a little more traction than it did. But with how the AAF has used it, I don't mind it at all. Maybe you do 4th and 12, 4th and 13, a little less than 4th and 15, but I think that adds a lot of intrigue. I think it adds another element of play calling and another element of, say, you just have a 4th and 15 specialist coach now that is just designed to make those play calls, you know? I think it would open things up a lot. I think that it's going to be a rule that doesn't go away anytime soon. I think it will continue to be brought up because it is something that we've seen successful in other leagues, and the NFL has taken a lot from other leagues they've taken from college. So don't be surprised if you hear this rule on the docket next year.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, this is another one. I mean, it would definitely be exciting. We got get-back coaches, and now we could have 4th and 15 specialists. Let's take a quick break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we're going to get into some trade-up candidates for the Eagles. If they want to move up from 25 to, let's say, the top 15, top 10, who could they be targeting? And maybe, hey, do they want to get back into the third round? Do they want to move up in the second? We're going to get into that next. That's coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to this Friday edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase alongside, as always, my co-host Gino Camilleri. So we got into a couple of the rule proposals at the league meetings this week in the first segment. Now I want to get into what we mentioned a little bit yesterday on our Jordan Howard reaction podcast, where we mentioned optionality now with basically every need that they had in 2019 taken off the table. They can basically do whatever they want at this point with, you know, what position they want to pick, if they want to move down. But what if they want to trade up? Do you know, let's say they're at pick 25 and someone falls within the top 10, top 15 that slips. And the Eagles are saying, hey, we got 2 second round picks here. We're going to have a bunch of comp picks next year. We got all our picks, basically, right? We have 2/4 this year. We still have a lot of ammo to add young talent, 9 picks in 2019. If they were to move up for somebody, who's the first name that comes to your mind?
Well, first off, I'm going to say two positions that they're not going to trade up for, and it's cornerback and linebacker.
Thank you.
I got in a huge argument, not an argument, a nice debate today on Twitter, saying that linebackers aren't as important as Eagles fans may think they are, because this team plays base defense rarely a quarter of the time. They play nickel, big dime 75% of the time. So if you're going to trade up, you're going to either, one, trade up for a guy that's going to be on the field 75% of the time, or an offensive positional unit that somebody falls, maybe like a DK Metcalf, which I can't see happening. So if you're going to take one name that has been rumored to fall, a guy that maybe after yesterday's pro day is more apt to stay where he is, but a guy that if he does fall into the teens, I'm calling up everybody if I'm Howie Roseman, and that's Ed Oliver. I think he's a guy that a lot of teams don't really know where he is because he's only around 290 pounds as a defensive tackle. And some teams even wanted him to take reps at linebacker at the combine. So wow, a lot of these teams don't really know where they can play him. And a guy who's a gap penetrating defensive tackle that would fit well into a rotation, there's one team in the NFL that loves to have a multitude of those guys, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, just imagine Fletcher Cox, Ed Oliver, Malik Jackson. That trio would just
unreal.
Be unbelievable. What are you going to do late in games when it's like, okay, they take Fletcher Cox off the field, but here come Malik Jackson and Oliver? I think that would be worth trading up, maybe even away one of your third-round picks next year, because you're going to have two with that Nick Foles comp pick. So if he's sitting there at 13, 14, and you have a chance to trade up, make the call, because he's a guy that he's talented. A lot of teams don't know what to do with him, so he may be more apt to fall. Those teams up top, they want to take a guy that they know exactly where he's going to fit in their scheme. They're going to take those edge rushers. They're going to take the top-end tight ends like the Hockensons. They're going to take those surefire safeties like the Chauncey Gardner-Johnsons. Ed Oliver is a guy that maybe he does fall. And if Kyler Murray goes one to the Cardinals, that flips everything on its head, and he would be even more apt to fall if Kyler goes that high.
It's crazy that teams are not as in love with Ed Oliver as maybe they should be.
It's bananas to me.
It just seems like a lot of draft analysts, a lot of media are hearing that just despite Ed Oliver, again, with his pro day, just seeing the athleticism. I mean, you talked about him playing linebacker. This is a defensive tackle that's just going to, you know, wreak havoc in the league, if you ask me. And yet, he's someone that could potentially slip to where it's realistic the Eagles go up and get him. I would say, okay, if the Bills at 9 pass on him right there, and he slips past the top 10, that's when you should really keep a close eye on Philadelphia going after Oliver. A guy for me that I think the Eagles could move up for, and it wouldn't even take... It wouldn't be something where they, you know, drastically move up, let's say, to the top 10 for Ed Oliver. Like, say he falls past Buffalo, the Eagles would have to move up about 15 spots. For this guy, and we talked about, you know, yesterday they added Jordan Howard, but we both agree that it doesn't take them out of the conversation at all for the Josh Jacobs sweepstakes, and I'm looking at the team right in front of them in the Oakland Raiders, who desperately need help at running back.
I was thinking they have to get above Houston, too, and maybe Houston, even to the Ravens.
So if they can move up just a couple spots for Josh Jacobs, I think they still would consider it their... You know, I know Jason Lockenfora said that they're interested in Josh Jacobs, which I don't put a lot of weight into what he says, but Jeff Mosher did say of 97.3 ESPN, a great Eagles insider. I do respect his opinion, and I think he knows what he's talking about. Him and Adam Kaplan both mirrored this thought that Josh Jacobs is very intrigued. Well, the Eagles are very intrigued in Josh Jacobs. I'm sure Jacobs would want to play in Philadelphia as well. And it would just be, you know, a Josh Jacobs, Jordan Howard 1-2 punch is like a souped up version of Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount, because Jacobs has that power and that size, much like Howard does and Ajayi and Blount, but he has receiving skills that none of those guys possess. So, and it's not something that would take a significant leap to grab him. It might just take a couple spots. Let's say he does slip past Baltimore and Houston. Maybe you only got to get from 25 to 23. So I think Jacobs is someone that it would be a smaller leap to move up and get him.
Absolutely. So I'm looking at the draft value chart here via drafttech.com. And the Eagles, their first-round pick, number 25, is worth 720 points. So say Houston and Oakland, right before them, are two teams that could draft Josh Jacobs. You want to get up to Baltimore. Their pick is worth 780. So you have to get up around 60 points on the draft count, draft chart wise. So you're looking right now, the Eagles have two picks in the fourth round. Pick 127 is worth 45 points. So a first, a fourth, I would do it. If you have to just get up around 60 points, a couple spots to trade up to get Josh Jacobs, would I hate to lose another pick in this class? Absolutely. But I think this would open them up to trading back in the second round with one of those picks, because they only have four picks between their first pick in the second round and their second pick in the second round. So if they have a bunch of guys in that second round class that they could take a little bit of a break on and trade back maybe 10, 15 spots, I think they'd be more apt to do that to recoup a fourth round pick. But Lou, I think you made a good point. I think if you want to get Josh Jacobs, you have to go ahead of Houston. You have to go ahead of Oakland, even though I still think those teams could improve on other positions of their team. Houston, offensive line especially, and the Raiders, literally every position on their team, maybe minus wide receiver. But if there's two teams that are going to take them in the top 25 or even in the first round, I think those three teams of Houston, Oakland, and Philly would be the candidates to take Josh Jacobs.
The great thing is with the new compensatory pick formula is it makes things like this a lot easier to do, because you know you can bank on, you know, getting a couple picks here and there in the third and the fourth round the next couple of years, where you can be like, hey, we have two fourths right now. One we got from, you know, the comp pick formula. It's easier now to get rid of that pick to grab a guy that, again, I think the only advantage teams like the Rams have and the Saints have over the Eagles is just an absolute weapon at running back. Let's take one more break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When we come back, we'll give a couple more potential trade-up candidates for the Eagles to target. This is Locked On Eagles. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles, wrapping up the show here, talking trade-up candidates for the Eagles, proposed rules that could be changed in the NFL this week. So we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Got a bunch other this week as well. We talked with Zach Moore of Over the Cap on Monday, diving into the Eagles salary cap structure. And then we interviewed Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State on Tuesday. Then yesterday, me and Gino, we recapped the Jordan Howard trade. So it was a busy week here on Locked On Eagles. Hope you enjoyed all our shows. You can find those, again, on any podcast platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. So wrapping up the show here, Gino, I got one more for you here in the first round. And you mentioned him before when we were talking about Ed Oliver. And it's not you love your boy Nazir Adderley, and I hope he falls at 25. But another guy that's I think the only guy that's
I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, I think,
and I'm totally on board.
I think Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, again, much like Josh Jacobs, if they can get up a couple spots, he's the only guy.
You have to get ahead of Seattle. You have to.
So if they could get ahead of Seattle, and you add Gardner-Johnson, like, I really like Adderley. He's someone I like. Deontay Thompson, I like Savage, I like Taylor Rapp more than many. I think that, you know, Juan Thornhill, who met with the Eagles, would be a good option in
that
pick
second
53.
Round is looking good for safeties, man.
Yeah. Pick 53 is going to have a lot of options at safety. But again, we'll see how this draft board falls. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, you add him with Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod. That's pretty scary. He's someone that can do it all at safety.
Yeah, and part of that debate I had on Twitter today regarding the linebackers is that I think a developmental safety, and we've been saying it for the past couple months, is way more important of a need than any form of linebacker.
Way
because
more. Safeties, you're just seeing, like, safeties have taken over what, like, the let's look at the Chargers, for instance. I mean, basically, outside of Denzel Perryman, they only use, I mean, a lot of teams are going towards the route of what the Eagles are doing, where they use, you know, we talk about two linebackers a lot of time. A lot of the time, they only use Nigel Bradham.
I agree, and they dropped Malcolm Jenkins down a lot. So now that you have Rodney McLeod back, who's an excellent single high safety, you have Sendejo that is going to provide you better reps than Corey Graham gave you last year. You bring in a versatile piece like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. A lot of teams are saying that he's a cornerback and not a safety. Those are players that Jim Schwartz loves. Look at the guys that they've drafted over the last couple years. Jalen Mills, a multi-positional player at LSU. You have Rasul Douglas, a multi-positional player at West Virginia. Avante Maddox, a multi-positional player at Pittsburgh. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, a big old safety, would fit that mold perfectly. He would be a guy that you could come in, develop to be that big nickel guy that could come in. He could cover on, he could cover tight ends, he could cover slot receivers, he could play single high safety. He's a guy that many scouts have been rising up their boards lately. I know our friends over at Bleeding Green Nation, especially Michael Kist, is a huge advocate of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and so am I, frankly, because you turn on his tape, the two best players on Florida, Ja'Kai Polite, he's fallen off lately. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson has done every single thing right on tape, in the film room, in meetings, in the combine. He is a guy that is continually gaining traction in this draft, and somebody that if you want to take him, you're going to have to get into the top 20. You're going to have to get ahead of Seattle, a team that has lost a couple of their safeties the last couple years. So he's a guy that if you are going to trade up, I'm 100% on board with you, Lou. As much as I would love Nazir Adderley, as much as I can think that you would get a lot of talent in that second round, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is in a tier of his own in the safety class this year.
Yeah, when I was watching the safeties, I liked a little bit about everybody's game, but Gardner-Johnson just pops off the screen. I mean, you can tell why he's the top one. He's just so much more fluid, smooth, and in coverage and tackling. He flies sideline to sideline.
Played big school ball too, so yeah. that separates him from Nazir.
So that's the thing, is Gardner-Johnson, and again, we'll see where the board falls, but they would have a field day using, they would enjoy that a lot, having the flexibility of using all six of those corners and, you know, those three safeties, and that they did also sign Sendejo. So he's another guy to look out for. Anybody else, maybe a mid-round guy or in the first round, we can do that too. One more candidate for the Eagles potentially to trade up for.
Yeah, so I've been saying that for a long time that I think they're going to find their way back into the third round. Either they trade that second round pick back or they give a couple fourths to get up in the third round. Because right now I'm looking at the Draft Network, I'm looking at their player rankings, and they have a guy to the Eagles multiple times Kalen Saunders at number 87, which is towards the end of the third round. And if, say, that Ed Oliver, that gift that would be Ed Oliver falls to us, say that doesn't happen, say we miss out on the top tier defensive tackles, I think Kalen Saunders is a guy that he's an athletic defensive tackle. You can move him all over the front four of the formation. If he's the best guy on your board and there's a big separation of defensive tackles from him and the rest, I think they find their way back up into the third round to draft a guy like him or a guy like a Daylon Mack too. I think there are a lot of guys in that third round territory that fit depth positions of this Eagles team. I think there are plenty of wide receivers there, guys like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I think there are plenty of defensive tackles. There are good offensive tackles like Titus Howard. I think the third round is where they need to get into one way or another. They're going to get blue chip prospects in the top of the draft, and they're going to find depth at the back half. But that middle portion, there's so many guys. I mean, let me just go down the list of number 80 to number, let's go to number 100. I'll just go real quick. Andy Isabella, Rodney Anderson, Rocky Sin, Rennell Wren, Elijah Holyfield, Dax Raymond, Blake Cashman, Kalen Saunders, Daylon Mack, Elton Jenkins, Gerald Willis, Titus Howard, Daniel Wise, Antoine Wesley, Jovan Williams, LJ Collier, we'll skip Daniel Jones, he's a bum, Wyatt Ray, Zach Allen, Jacoby Myers. All of those guys could fit on this Eagles team. They are all at positions of need, and that is the prime territory, is that third round. I really think they find a way in. They've been collecting 2020 picks. I think maybe you'd be more apt to move one of those 2020 picks if you can find one of your guys in those middle rounds. Say you give it up like Detroit did to us a couple of years ago. You give up a comp third to get back into the third round this year, and you give up another fourth this year as well. I think they'd be more than willing to do that.
Yeah, they could get back up in the third round. They can get back. You know what's even interesting, too? You look at last year how they moved out of pick 32 because mm-hmm. there was a team like Baltimore who really, really wanted their quarterback in Lamar Jackson. Part of the incentive for that, even if Baltimore could have got him in the second round, is having that fifth-year option ability by taking Absolutely. A guy in the first round. So that's another thing to watch. Who knows? Maybe at pick 25, you move out of 25 to move up in a different round, in the second round.
I think
round,
so.
Or in the third. Like let's say Drew Locke starts, you know, to slip down boards, or for some godforsaken reason, a team really likes Daniel Jones. I really hope it's the Giants. Although it seems like the Giants really like him and Will Greer, so that's fine. But like, just hypothetically, that could happen. And the Eagles move out of 25, and then hey, maybe they move back into the late of the second round or into the third. You could take a raw pass rusher like a Joe Jackson from Miami or a Jalen Ferguson from Louisiana Tech if the board shapes out where a lot of the immediate pass rushers go quickly in the first round. So there's a lot of options for the Eagles that even mm-hmm. if they were to move down in the first, like you're talking about, and like I just mentioned with, you know, a potential another second round pick, moving down in the first could move them back up into the second or the third. Let me ask you before we wrap up the show, a guy you didn't mention through that list, unless I didn't hear him, is Mecole Hardman someone you think could be available in the third if the Eagles got back in?
Yeah, let me touch on Mecole real quick, but I'll get back to him in a second. Just one thing that before it escapes my brain. I think this draft is going to be a lot like that 2013 draft where we godforsakenly took Marcus Smith. I think there were a lot of top-tier blue-chip guys, but if it starts to fall off in that 20 range, you know, and I think if it's like 2013 where they were waiting for Brandon Cooks, they were waiting for HaHa Clinton Dix to fall, and they just happened to have a couple teams jump right in front of them. If guys like Christian Wilkins and Nasir Adderley and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson start to come off the board right ahead of them, I could see them being very apt to move out of that 25 spot and move back a couple more picks to collect more picks. But in regards to Mecole Hardman, I read something very, very interesting yesterday from Matt Miller over at Bleacher Report, and he said that he's been hearing that guys like Paris Campbell, Mecole Hardman, and Emmanuel Hall are all going to go way higher in the draft than many people think because the NFL loves these speed guys.
They do,
and
yep.
especially guys like Mecole Hardman. If a team thinks he's more finished than he looks like on tape, and a guy like a Terry Godwin, a lot of those guys can start to slip up draft boards. And like I said, Lou, I think that third round territory is right where you're going to see a lot of those guys start to fly off, and they're going to need to get up there if you want to grab a guy like a Mecole Hardman, because teams do love the speed. You see it time and time again, and Matt Miller made a great point. Teams love that speed. Paris Campbell, coming into this draft process, where was he pegged? A late third round pick?
We kept taking him in like on our second Locked in the Mock episode. We got him. We grabbed him in like the fourth round. Now I'm seeing him. You got to grab him at the top of the second if you want him based on the value.
Some people were even mocking him in the first, which I think is completely ludicrous, but that's what happens. You never know how the board is going to fall. So I think if you see one of those speed guys go away, there could be a run on him, and say Emmanuel Hall sneaks into the first round somehow. I could see it happening. There's so I think this draft, aside from many of the drafts in prior years, have so many different avenues that it could take place. There are talks that Quinnen Williams could fall out of the top 10, which is just bananas to me. A guy like that should be a top three pick any day of the week. I just think anything is possible. The draft board, how it is set, is not going to be how it is come that Thursday evening in April. So many things can happen, Lou, and I'm very, very excited about this draft. We're so heavily invested in it. We've been doing our research. We've been reading every single mock draft. We've been doing plenty of mock drafts, reading player reports, writing player reports. That this one, I think the Eagles, unless they draft a bunch of guys and overdraft a bunch of guys that we don't like, I think they're going to come out on top in this draft, and they're going to add to these positions that they don't really have a glaring need for anymore, because frankly, this is one of the most complete Eagles rosters we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and that's going to allow for the 2019 draft to be really fun to watch, and we will continue our coverage of the draft. We are less than a month away. April 25th is when we get going. The first round, the Eagles pick at 25 for now. We'll see if that stays the truth in a couple weeks. But for my co-host, Gino Camilleri, right now we're signing off here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining us. We will be back this weekend. We're gonna come back. Gino's talking about mock drafts. Locked On the Mock returns at the start of next week. So make sure you subscribe to the show. Please leave a review if you can. Check out our stuff on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiaseLOE, and at Gino_LOE. Our written content as well, LockedOnEagles.com. Thank you so much for listening once again this week on Locked On Eagles. For Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase, signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.